What is the problem with the proprietary models? It's basically the censorship and copyright, and I'm not talking about the censorship that Elon Musk is talking about. I'm more talking about at OpenAI, they tell you, I can't generate this for you. Can we go down with the volume? Yep. So basically, if you want to generate a Mickey Mouse and SpongeBob holding hands, most of the proprietary systems try to prevent this on the prompt input level. If you get your prompt through to the image system, there is typically nothing preventing it. Some of the systems have some safe for work filters, but typically some non-safe for work data slipped into all the models, and if you know how, you can also generate not safe for work material with all the models. Then all the proprietary things are typically limited to at most 1,500 times 1,500. So if you just want to generate your 4K or full HD wallpaper, you can't with proprietary stuff. You can on your cheap GPU or even CPU if you're patient enough at home. Basically, the proprietary tools are basically give us your prompt and we'll give you an image. There is no real customization. There is no artistic freedom for you to give it more levels of guidance. And that's basically where the tools I'll show you come in, and the most insanely priced tools are really $100 a month, which in my opinion is just insane. And basically the only artistic choice you have is retrying with a slightly other prompt, and typically you won't really get the thing you want, at least if you want something very specific. You will get your blonde Aryan FPÖ kids or something, but you probably won't get them wearing some funny hats and doing some other stuff. Basically for that you would need the AI expert. You'll be in less than an hour. So the first free and open source tool is the A1111 or automatic 111 Stable Diffusion Web UI. It is the standard tool where you have a positive prompt, a negative prompt, and you can then with an easy pointy clicky UI install some extra models and LoRAs. It's the most user-friendly thing. It's basically checking it out in GitHub. The setup script does your virtual environment in Python. It's the most convenient, but we'll go two steps further. There is Flutomantic, which is basically just a fork, as you can probably see. Looks very similar, but just with another GUI framework, and in my opinion, it's nicer designed. It's slightly jankier, but also they have some fixes. I think it's the fork that will eventually survive and succeed, but that's just a stupid prediction. And here is the relevant part, Comfy UI. That's what my workshop will be about. Basically, it's node-based programming. The nodes are color-coded, and this is the most simple workflow you can have. It's basically load your model, prompt, image size, then you have a sample, and in the end, you have an image. And you can enhance this with a lot of intermediate steps. All these nodes are Python programmable, and basically like standard Python, whatever you imagine, there is a Comfy UI node for it. You want to do mathematics, you want to do audio input, you want to do video stuff, you want to just evaluate some random Python code, there always is a node for it. Basically, it's the rule 34 of Python. There is always a package for it. If it exists, there is a package for it. And it's the same with Comfy UI nodes. But it's also really easy to make your own nodes. I just last week, in preparation for this talk, made my own nodes. So basically, you already saw it. It's slightly more complicated than Scratch, but it's a user click-drag mouse helpful UI, so you just drag the lines and you can only stick the lines together with compatible things. You can only paste a model in a model input, you can only paste the conditioning in a conditioning input, and if something goes wrong, you get a very developer-friendly full stack output from Python, which isn't as nightmarish as a Java stack trace. It typically fits on a screen. It does the memory management for you, so even if you don't have a lot of video RAM, like I'm way too poor to have some 24 gigabyte GPU to run the really cool new modern models, and then it partially loads in the model, and then it loads the next chunk of the model. You sometimes have to set minus low VRAM, but I think by now they detect everything, and it's really automatic. There are really checkout and go. You do the git clone, you run one shell script or batch file, and then it's set up on your machine. It will run in the background, then you only have to install some models via the UI. And there is the conf UI manager, that's the standard thing that's not installed, to install other stuff. It's basically the package manager. You just have to clone it into the nodes thing, and then you'll have the thing I'll show you later. Some other tip is if you run your browser without GPU optimizations, for me, the browser can eat up to a gigabyte of video RAM, which if you only have 8 of them because you have a shitty GPU, that's already very helpful. Or also running your UI without GPU acceleration can save you the video RAM that you need, because basically, like in regular computing, the moment you are swapping, it gets unbearably slow. So if you want to run it from home, 6 to 8 gigabytes of video RAM is required, plus 50 to 100 gigabyte of space, depending on which models you want to run and which extra things you want to run. So roughly the same specs you need to run the current Call of Duty or Cyberpunk. So it's rather reasonable specs. The older models basically also work on weaker hardware. It's highly recommended, like most AI stuff, sadly, to run it on NVIDIA. I've heard the Apple support is pretty great with the ARM hardware. Some people also say the AMD support is great. I have no idea about that. I have an NVIDIA GPU. I also linked my provisioning script for Workshop. There you get the full Docker Compose start up. So if you prefer to run it on NVIDIA Docker, then it's just one Docker container up. And it contains some nodes. They're just for later reference if you try to reproduce the stuff at home. Nothing of this makes sense to explain now. So basically, how does the diffusion process work? Stable Diffusion, that's the AI model that draws a picture. So basically, you start out with a noisy image. So this is how you do regular drawing as a human. You iteratively draw in more things, and that's basically also how this model works. It starts out with random noise. The canvas isn't a white screen, but some random stuff. So every time you rerun it with another noise seed, these models will generate new things. But if you set the seed to a fixed value, then you have deterministic reproducible stuff. So in reality, it looks like on the left. If you, after each step of running the model, you just iteratively get less and less noise, you can probably already imagine how these things are trained. You just take an image, put more noise in, throw it into a model, and then you say you now train to be a denoising model. That's everything. And basically, that's the thing we learned in AI in the last 5 to 10 years. That if you give the models self-regressive, so it's step-by-step trying to give a good output, same as language models, that's way easier than the old way we did it, where we asked the model to, in one step, give you everything. So basically, first thing is you use clip, that's to take your text prompt and put it into a latent space. I'll get to what a latent space is soon, but basically the thing you get is a conditioning. It's just a vector, and you then use this vector and you use your latent noise, and then using the model, it's basically, you can imagine you have a canvas, your painter is your model, and the reference is the prompt. And then the model, in every step, tries to denoise the random noise it started to get it more and more to look like the thing you want to paint, for example, an owl, as we had it before. And it really depends on how many steps you do, but in the standard way, it's like 20 steps. And it's way easier to make just a noisy image a bit more like a target than doing it one step. And basically, you're not working in pixel space, but in latent space. I'll come to that. So in the end, from your latent space, you then have to decode it to pixel space, but that's really standard AI stuff. That's not the thing I'll talk about because it's a standard network, basically. So what is the history of that stuff? I'll come to why it's relevant. Nobody cares about history, I know. But basically, around 2015 to 2020, GANs, generative adversarial networks, were all the hype with image generation in Vienna at Easterhack. I gave a talk. It's also linked here. Also, just look up GAN on MediaCCC, and you can see the video. And that was one of the things that tried to already do the contrastive learning that I'll come to. So it tries to check if the thing it generated is good or not, but it tried to do it in one step. And basically, it all started in 2021 when DALL-E 1 was released. It basically changed the world. It was quite a hype in the AI scene, and media basically caught up, and even the first thing from OpenAI, the DALL-E 1, was pretty great already, and it took the open source community basically a year to reproduce the thing and to come out with Stable Diffusion 1. All the things that are Stable Diffusion are by Stability AI, and basically it's a company that just open sourced their models. They, especially in the early models, didn't really care too much about, hey, is this ethically fine, on which data we are training on? We'll just take everything. We'll just train on 5 billion images, the Lion data set. Some other systems trained on limited images, the closed source things, also trained on other stuff. Basically, slightly after DALL-E, there was Midjourney, but basically, they, even though they had way better image quality, they didn't get as much hype because the open source stuff already was out. And then after Stable Diffusion 1 came Stable Diffusion 2. That was basically trash because they really limited the data set. They messed something up with the training. It's a model that came out and nobody really cared about it, but it's legally way better to use because it's more safe for work, and they basically patched out some artists who said, I don't want to be at least as a reference in this image set. Their images, if they weren't properly labeled, were probably still inside, but at least you couldn't enter the names of living artists anymore. Because the artists that are still alive use the right to say stuff against it. I won't talk about the ethics. I think if you're an artist, you have an opinion on that. And if you're an open everything person, I think you have another opinion about it. But basically, nobody liked Stable Diffusion 2. They found a good balance with Stable Diffusion XL. It's, in my opinion, the best medium-sized model. That currently has really good community support, and just recently they came out with Stable Diffusion 3, but they released it with a really stupid license that basically nobody liked. It was really ambiguous what you can do, what you can't do without it, and the medium model they gave to everyone was just trash. It was, in a lot of cases, worse than Stable Diffusion XL. It had problems with human anatomy. It basically could only do photorealism or anime. It couldn't really do artistic styles a lot. So just keep away from Stable Diffusion 3. The people from Stable Diffusion 3 just went out, founded their own company, and released Flux 2 months later. It's literally all the same offers. It's nearly the same technology. And just like everything in the last 2 years, they had an immense gain in performance by just adding transformers. If you talk to AI people, adding transformers always makes everything better. This isn't a language talk, but basically everything's better with transformers always. I thought about putting the Transformers theme song here. So basically, I used the plain models without any LoRAs, without any fine-tuning to show you what they're kind of bad. So mostly you see cherry picks of good stuff. This is basically cherry picks of bad stuff. So on the left, you have Stable Diffusion 1. It really had problems with getting the correct amount of fingers on a hand. Often it was 4, often it was 6. Basically, any text that's longer than one word, it wasn't really able to. But it's also a really small model, so that's really to be expected. Also, it didn't really have the cross-attention transformer thing, which you need for in-image consistency, for really knowing where other stuff is to put in the stuff you currently have. Stable Diffusion XL, as you see, sometimes it works. Sometimes it actually says hello world, or at least hello world. I mean, that's pretty okay already. And on the right side, you see Flux. It's just a quantum leap. It gets the words right every time. I think you can barely see it, but I think there's only one picture where a person has one finger too much on all the other things. Basically, every image has some wrongness to it. And with Flux, I really think you can't get it right. The only thing with Flux is, for some reason, it doesn't get nipples right. There is basically the meme that it always does jelly bean nipples, which is a very random thing, no matter which gender, by the way. And the variance is kind of weird in Flux. Sometimes it draws some really samey pictures, where, as you can see, the variance in the earlier models is way higher, whereas all the Flux models kind of have a similar look to it, even though all of them are from some noise seed. But, of course, we'll come later to how you can fix this. So I already had it. How do these models work? All of them iteratively add more details by denoising. So on the right, I really wrote a small workflow. It's linked when you click the circle to all workflow in the slides to run it at home, where it iteratively always adds some more details and does the full denoising then. So basically, I tried to recreate conceptually to make the model actually do it so that humans understand it. But in reality, it's basically like on the left. And it just doesn't look as nice on the left. And I think the thing on the right is really nice. There is also a node to just combine multiple images you process in a batch to a GIF. So it's really nice for making small GIFs. So I mentioned the clip before. The clip is the thing that takes your prompt and transforms it to the latent space. Basically, the reason I'm talking about this is to be good at prompting, you should know how a thing was trained, because to get good results, you should do something that's similar than the training. AI models always perform best if you're in the data, if you're asking a code model about code, if you're asking an image model about stuff that was in the image data a lot. For example, cats and dogs was in the image data a million times. Women were in image data like twice as much than men. And if you're asking for some exotic animal like iguanas, there probably were only 3 pictures in there. So probably the niche images aren't that great. And basically clip always, it builds a matrix and it tries to into a latent space. So wait. Ah, yeah, here are latent spaces. It's just a multi-dimensional room, and it basically tries to transform images and text into the same space, and it tries to make the image and the caption of the image. That's typically some search engine optimization word salad, or it's the alt text for blind people. So thanks, accessibility, you enabled image training. Basically, it tries to get them as close as possible. And then the contrastive part, it also tries to make other images as far away from some random label. That's basically the contrastive part. This is a thing that they already recognized with guns. If you don't just tell the model what's right, but also what's wrong, that is really helpful. So basically, you create a data set, and we typically only ship for the clip, for the vision transformer, we only have to ship the text part. Normally, you don't need the image to embedding because you just want a prompt with text. They're only trained on 2 to 4 pixels squared, so on relatively small things, they are downscaling it. So always think about, there can't be a million things in an image that's that downscaled. The model will just not get a thing that's very small in the image as a concept. So there are clip, so contrastive, language, image, pre-training, that's the encoder, that's the important part, that's where you put your text in to get the embedding space. Basically, there are multiple variants, and the different stable diffusion variants are using different variants. The models are shipped with that, but basically they made it bigger, and bigger always turned out to be better. They also trained the bigger ones more. Also, the easy thing was just add more encoders with stable diffusion. They started with B. With stable diffusion 2, they used H, the medium-sized one, and then with XL, they used L and G, so a second one. And basically, the more modern we get, they are just adding more vision encoders to get better results. It's a classic mehr bringt mehr thing, to bring in the Austrian saying. And the cool thing is also they now brought in a T5, which is a text encoding transformer. That's a thing that has been trained on human text, and it's more for the LLM world. And you can separately prompt the different encoders because they do different stuff. Okay, I'm getting that I'm already a bit short on time, so I'll speed up a bit. So that's the Flux architecture. There is a transformer in the middle. Latent spaces, what are they? Okay. So basically, an image of 512.512.3 is always batched into basically like JPEG compression, 8 times 8 pixels, and one of those 8 times 8 blocks is only a depth of 3, a depth of 4. So basically, the latent space is way smaller, which enables the model to run even rather big images through your GPU. The main thing that uses the resources on your computer is every pixel of those has to go through the whole model, and everything has to interact with everything a lot of times. That's what makes it slow, but basically, the costly part, that's why you can do batch processing. The costly part is typically loading the model, not loading the data. The data doesn't take up that much space. If you can run the model, you typically also can run 8 pictures through it at the same time, and due to how caching and loading and stuff works, running 8 pictures at a time isn't 8 times as slow, but just twice as slow. So that's always when you're experimenting with those things and you want to cherry pick a good example, run batches. The embedding space of clip is 768. So basically, it comes from the embedding space. And clip only takes 77 tokens. A token is a half word. It's some LLM thing that I won't explain. Basically, you split up words into half words so AI models can process them. So basically, any prompt you throw into one of those language models that is longer than roughly 30 medium-sized words or short words will just be truncated and ignored. It's the same in the proprietary models. People have done testing on that. Basically, everyone is using clip. That basically limits, but you can prompt every clip thing separately, and the T5 XL has a bigger latent space. And I built a plugin to do the latent space walk. And for natural language processing, an example that is always taught in university is there are vectors or points in multidimensional space, but you can just imagine it in two or three dimensional space, and going from man to woman is the same direction as going from king to queen. So the ordinal direction in multidimensional space, it's just for the mathematicians here, typically has a meaning. Where the point is doesn't really have a meaning, but things that are close together should also be close in output space and in meaning space. But you're always trying to cram everything into one space, so if you're putting too much prompt into one prompt, then your image won't turn up, because it's just trying to average and to medium out everything. So you have to do some conditioning. So prompting tricks. It's not just for the open models. For prompting clip, you do the classic search engine word salad, basically like Instagram and Flickr. That's where they stole most of their stuff from. You don't use hashtags, you use commas. They, in the pre-training, basically did everything to lowercase and with commas. So connected concept with commas, distinct concept with commas, connected concepts, like if you want a tall, gray-haired man with a funny hat, that is one thing in between commas. And then there is the T5 XXL in the conf UI thing. You can prompt that separately, and in the newer models, that's the thing that does most of the semantic, of the meaning, of the content, of the motif. The other thing is more on the stylistic side. So the T5 XXL, it's train on regular language. The standard training thing was people just threw in the same text in multiple languages and hoped that it would encode to the same latent space. So that's also a thing with language models. The same sentence, ich gehe nach Hause, I'm going home, should be really close in latent space. Only the one dimension representing language should be different. Doesn't really work like that in reality, but it's close. They are still close. You can also prompt in German. It typically doesn't make much of a problem. Also, fun fact, if you want to do hacking of such models, if there is some firewall, some forbidden words, you just go Russian, Chinese, or whatever. You use Google Translate and you build a word salad of multiple languages. Those models are fine with it. Doesn't have to make sense. You can just put in spelling mistakes. They are inherently somewhat denoising. That's pretty cool. And basically also the latent space, the noisy thing, you can already, if you want to do some composition thing, you can already draw a paint draft thing, and then it will know where stuff is. I'll have an example image a bit later. Also for prompting, LLMs are pretty good because people are blogging about it for like 3 years. So ask the LLM of your choice, hey, how can I improve my prompt? That's what DALL-E does since forever. But you can also use your open LLMs, and even the small 7B models are great at it. And also there's a node for it. Of course, there's a node for it. So prompting image models, I always get very sad when I see people prompting language models. So here is the whole guide of what to do. You want to specify a motif, like cute dog wearing a funny hat. You want to specify a style. By default, most things are, if you're asking for a realistic thing, they're going to be realistic. If you're asking for some chibi anime girl, it already knows what the style is. Then basically, if you're going for photorealistic, photo positioning, all the cool camera words that the people in Flickr or in stock images use, like total, half total, zoomed in, zoomed out from the side. Basically, if you give that, that is really helpful in the guidance because it's really in the data. The color scheme you want typically is very helpful. Just throw in some colors you like. Then there is some tricks, because also it's just in the data. Unreal Engine render will give you this CGI look, but typically the Unreal Engine images in the data are really nice, maximum high-res Unreal 5 demo images that basically give you the thing you couldn't render. So it's basically better than photorealistic, or some camera name, some Sony A5000 camera, also just magically gives you better images, especially on Stable Diffusion 1.5 and a bit on XL, just because it's in the training data. You always have to think, how was this thing trained to prompt it? Try to be in the data. For the older models, you should use the standard resolution stats for Stable Diffusion 1.768². For Stable Diffusion XL, there's a list of it, just Google it, but 1024². And for everything newer than Stable Diffusion 3, they finally used basically the same thing as in Transformer LLMs, where it doesn't matter. They basically used a variant of rotation, embedding, positioning. Basically, you can run any resolution, even if it wasn't in the training data, because they figured out how to do that. They basically trained mostly on 1024 and some aspect ratios with that. Yeah, use commas, not hashtags. Try to keep in the token limit for your clip thing. Less is more. Iterate, cherry pick. Yeah, then the note that I wrote was to visualize latent spacewalks. On the left, I'm visualizing the concept of a latent space with a gradient of noise. So basically, the noise space, I made it so that you can interpolate between the initial noise, and you can see how the image from top left to bottom right morphs into the other thing. And on the right, I did it in the latent space of the output. In the output, that's just the thing the variational autoencoder does. It's really close to pixel space already, whereas the starting space has the biggest input. And these are the two things that are mildly interesting at latent spaces. And the coolest part about latent spaces is if you walk into the conditional space. So the conditioning is the thing that falls out of your clip thing. So basically, the left one is Stable Diffusion XL, the right one is Flux. The great thing is, with the conditional latent walking, the model doesn't need to adapt to it at all. Because Flux is so new, there isn't really a lot of technology for it. And I basically said, poor guy on a bench, successful CEO, rich man in a suit in a boss chair on the other end, and then I made it walk from the one end to the other end. And the other one is a modern suburban house to a skyscraper. And basically, this is what turns out if you let the sampler run on the same seat with different input conditions, and you do very small steps in the latent space. I think it's already pretty nice. I have some other images in that style. Then also, what happens if you just do a random walk? It works best if you already start with something trippy, because then it's just tripping in trippy latent space. So you can see it's already starting in the trippiest prompt I could imagine. I think it's very cliche LSD colors, and it's really giving you the LSD aesthetic. Seemingly, that was in the training data, because that was the second try from me. So this isn't cherry-picked. Nothing of this is cherry-picked. And you can also just start from your face, for example, and do some random walk and then morph your face into some random stuff. And I think that's really cool, and that's really computationally cheap. I mean, you have to rerun the sampler a bit, but it's really easy. This is a workflow with like 5 nodes or so. So it doesn't get much simpler than that. Then a thing you also don't get with the proprietary models, but it's implicitly in those models, because that's how they were trained. Basically, masking, inpainting, outpainting, so they also were trained with, hey, you have half of a stock image, draw the other half. By denoising left clear text image, right noise image, so it doesn't just train on a noise mask that is evenly distributed. So you basically just right-click your input image, add mask, and then that's it. There are dedicated in- and outpainting models that do it even better, that don't need a prompt. But basically, that's the thing these models do intrinsically by training. And it's really underutilized by a lot of models. Also blur your outlines, so the models have like, you only have to add a bit of stuff here and you completely have to redraw this part. So you even have like grades of how much you want to change it. You can also, if you want to pirate a stock image, you throw it in, you say throw in 10% noise and try to redo it. And then you will get an image that technically came out of your generative AI system. They are really well trained on removing the watermarks. basically, I really think stock imagery is basically dead. Also, that's why the Adobe thing isn't bad. They bought like a lot of stock image stuff and trained on it. But also the open things trained on a lot of stock images. If you just need stock images, there's no reason to buy them by now. You just generate them. FPÖ does it, you should do so too. I hope nobody of you is a stock image photographer. I think you're the first one that actually got caught by AI. I'm sorry for you people. Inpainting the background. Here is an example for the mask. I just took the original super high-res Mona Lisa, masked out the background and said, you're now in a new futuristic LED cyberpunk city, but keep the style of the Mona Lisa. The workflow is called inpainting background, so we'll have an example instance later. It just made that out. It left the Mona Lisa as is. And on the second image, on the very rightmost, I did two runs by rerunning it with also add some denoising over everything, and there are so-called refiner models in Stable Diffusion XL that just add some more details and make some weird stuff a bit less weird, let's say it like that. So basically the core, the pseudo algorithm I told you before, in ConfUI it's called the K-sampler because it's sampling using the models, and the inputs, I hope it's readable, are the model, we already talked about it, the positive and negative conditions. I skipped about negative condition. They are treated a bit differently. And basically, it's always going one step in that direction, one step in the not negative direction. The standard negative prompt is watermark, ugly hands, and text. Because typically, you don't want text, and a lot of images have text. You can pass in a latent image. That's already stuff we covered. But now, there are a lot of parameters, and to properly use the tooling, you actually got to understand what some of those mean. And that's what I'll go into. It's a bit technical, but I try to keep it as user-friendly as possible. Also, the output isn't an image, but a latent. And you need two of those for Stable Diffusion XL because you do a second run for the refiner. This is a separate model. This has the advantage that you only need the first model in memory once, and then you need the refiner in memory. Basically, this means you can have bigger models with smaller input. First, you load the clip model, then you load the samplers, and then you load the refiners, and then you load the decoder. That's better design than the previous gun thing that just did everything at once and had to load the big model at once, which is just bad for caching and for other stuff. So typically, you don't need the start and end at step. That's just for refiner workflows. But basically, CFG, classifier free guidance scale, it's specific to models, it's preset to 8. I think 8 is a bit high for anything but Stable Diffusion 1.5. Flux, it needs to be between 3 and 4. It will get really bad. If your image ends up washed out, a bit too light, a bit pastel-y, your CFG was too light. It's what you can see on this side. And if it's basically a deep fried meme with way too much contrast, some noise, very high frequency and some fireflies, as it's called, then you went too far with your CFG. Of course, there's a note for that. It's called auto CFG. It typically does what it says. Try auto CFG. If it doesn't, Google up the model you're using, and there are then special LoRAs that I'll talk about later. They also typically need a very low CFG. So there's turbo lightning and hyper. I'll come to what that is in a bit. And typically, the more steps you do, the smaller you can take your CFG, because it's basically how much it's painting, how hard it's pressing down the pen. It's the best analogy I can give you, and it's just drawing harder and denoising harder with a high CFG. There's samplers and schedulers. Typically, the presets are fine. Try to avoid the non-deterministic samplers, so they do different stuff every time you run them. They have an A in the end of the name, and try some other samplers. Basically, the standard things are the most old reliable, but they are the slowest. You need the most steps. Euler, DPM2, DDIM are the things that are really cool, and LCM. They just did some machine learning language magic so that you can do it in one step. So basically, instead of the iterative drawing, they found a way to sample in just one step and give you images that are really great. I won't go into how that is, but if you want to read an interesting paper, I think the Hyper the models for that, the papers for that are really great AI research. So basically, you can get even more control than by just using the baseline models, by using some diffs, some patches. If you're a software developer, basically, you just on top of the standard model, you put some very small change log. I want to use a fine-tune from someone else that is really good at anime stuff. Pony is very good at stuff that rhymes with it. Dream Shaper is with a dreamy realistic, also Epic Realism Juggernaut is really good. They are mostly LoRAs for Stable Diffusion XL and also for 1.5. If you have the VRAM, always try the things for XL. My opinion, you gotta. There's way more fine tunes and LoRAs for SD1.5 because it's out longer, the community is bigger, but you gotta tweak more with 1.5, but also there are more preset things. So the thing I was talking about, these diffs or patches that you can put on top of a base models, they are called LoRAs. Low rank adapter. Adapter, you just plug it in. It's like the USB adapter, just remember the A part. The low rank is matrix decomposition, mathematics stuff that you forgot the semester after you had it in university. But basically, it really helps on making a diff not the same size as the model, but only some megabytes. Then basically, control nets are mainly for modifying the model behavior. To do more what you want, to give you some control on the output. And IP adapters on the fly build you a LoRA to copy a style just based on an image. I'll come to that a bit more. And the older things just have more of everything, but they are generally worse. Flux by now has a really shitty IP adapter, but they have it since 5 days. It's not really working. I'm not sure if on my setup thing it already works, but IP adapter is a whole wonderland in itself. And also there is special saving formats. It's like codecs in videos where you only use up a third or a quarter of the space. They just one-to-one stole it from large language models. The GGUF, it's quantizations, it's also something to do with decomposition, and this way a 12 billion parameter model, floating point 16, runs on my 8 gigabyte video RAM model. So I'm on average using less than 1 byte per floating point number in my graphics card, and I can run it at home at acceptable speeds. Basically, that's also installed, and for Flux, on the test instance I set up, you can only use GGUF because I didn't want to download the whole 24 gigabyte Flux thing twice. So low rank adapters are just diffs. You get a left and right part and you multiply it together. And the left and right part, because of matrix magic, are way smaller than the thing when you multiply them together. Basically, it's a standard operation in machine learning. And it's typically the standard LoRAs are made for just a style. You guide the model into doing pixel art, doing anime, doing not safe for work, doing nipples that don't look like jelly beans, doing proper hands, doing better text. And then there are really special LoRAs where they figured out how to make the model finish in way less steps. There's the Turbo, the Lightning, and the Hyper. Those are mostly fine-tuned by Baidu, the Chinese Google, basically. And they also just open-sourced it, so for once, the big ones are also really helpful. And you can even get in one or two steps, and especially if you have weak hardware, needing just one, two, or four steps. In my opinion, the four-step ones are the sweet spot. You get 99% of the quality in four instead of 20 steps. For inpainting, it's not that great because inpainting needs a lot of context from the stuff around. But if you from the ground up want to generate images, just use the low-rank adapter for LoRa's Lightning Hyper. It's just the load LoRa node. There's a node for that always. You just have to change the steps and, as we said, lower the CFG to roughly one. Also, the Flux Schnell that they released is basically one of those things. So Flux already released a fast variant, a Turbo Lightning Hyper variant on release, and it's the one with the least restrictive license. These models have some weird properties with reversibility, and they are taught in teacher-student manner, and some part of it is bad from a machine learning perspective, but from a user perspective, just go hyper-lightning if you can, basically. This is how Stable Diffusion 1.5 LoRa, so this is stuff from 3 years ago, basically. People have fine-tuned on how to get really nice images, and because the specific LoRAs already make you generate way nicer images for that special one category you're going for. You're basically, an STXL LoRa is roughly on the level of Flux, and as STA15 level is roughly on the level on STXL. So you really get a lot of visual fidelity out with LoRAs. All of those images are also linked if you click on them, if you download the presentation. Then control nets. I stole this directly from Reddit. It's the first control net thing a person made and posted. Basically, they filmed themselves dancing. Then there's a node for that extracted their per frame outlines and their pose with open pose. It's also installed on the instance. And then on the left, they just applied a style and used a control net, which works really similar to a LoRa. It's just a diff that in the sampling process makes it sample slightly different. It initializes stuff differently. The noise is already starting at, hey, here in embedding space should be the arm of a person. Here should be the head of a person and so on. And this is how for video, it's basically the really hard part that I think will have like a year until video will be really great. You need to combine all the stuff I've taught you about to get really great video. Then IP adapter, you just give it one image, and it either tries to copy the style. If you use IP adapter standard, the plus variants are always just more strength. It tries to do the thing you're trying to do harder. Sometimes you just want it to be really Van Goghy, and sometimes you want to be like just the colorful aspect of Van Gogh. And you can just really pass in Starry Night with an IP adapter and a portrait, and it will overdraw your portrait as if it was drawn by Van Gogh. Then there's Face ID, where you can just do face swapping. Then there are IP adapter nodes where you can influence the composition a lot, like the control nets. And you, for IP adapter, always need the appropriate LoRa diff. It's just with Git diffs or with Git patches. It only makes sense with the original model. So you can only apply an SD15 adapter on an SD15 model and an SDXL on an SDXL model. So always consider that you've selected the correct one, because otherwise you'll get just weird results, such as the Python stack trace, because dimensions don't match up. And internally, it's using ClipVision, and it's basically trying to guide it more into the latent space, and you need the prep for IP adapter node, so that ClipVision, that's the thing that I've taught you before, that you take an image and you put the image into clip space, which is the 244, that's the stuff that it's been trained on. Basically, you have to first prepare it. The model will comply, but it will just give you garbage output. I think they can do more error handling there. There's a node for it. Then there is animative. For some reason, the video doesn't work here. But basically, there is a set of nodes where you can just enter an animation prompt. But basically, the more you initialize it, because with animation, the consistency is the major problem, you can do keyframing, where you say it at frame 0, I want you to have this prompt, at keyframe 30, I want you to have this prompt, and then it does some windowing and walk over it. This is basically, you get the worst results. It's a bit like my latent walk, but it's interpolating smoother because it's already trained explicitly on motion. It's also a kind of LoRa. And if you go image to video, your results already get way better because it knows where to start and where to go from it. There are just separate nodes for it to initialize it. And video to video, as I saw with the dance video, is by far the best. So if you can just start at a video where just the rough motion matches up with what you want to do, you will get the most consistent and the best results, especially if you throw in some LoRa, some control nets, and so on. But it's really hard if you see that stuff. Some people already made a whole 20-minute anime just out of it, some YouTube CGI team, and they were really great with the consistency, but they just filmed it in real life and then they made it anime, and that seemingly is the best way to get it. And of course it needs some post-processing, but it was really on the level of high quality 100 people Studio Ghibli, or really the big stuff. Quickly, all the content I have to cut. I guess I'm over time already, I feel like. Slightly, yeah. Yep. So I skipped stable video diffusion, stable audio diffusion. Basically, it's models that are rather newer. I skipped explaining what these diffusion transformers even are, what those transformers are. Transformers just always make everything better in AI. And basically, diffusion transformers are a special variant of it. And there is a special category of models that was invented in Germany. They are really small. They're called Würstchen. You can also try them at home, especially if you have weak hardware. It has the same requirements as Stable Diffusion 1.5, but is roughly as great as XL, but it has a smaller community. Then prompt enhancement via LLM, I didn't show much of about that. Combining multiple methods, like you let it run a bit Stable Diffusion XL and then finish on Flux. Multi-sampler runs, so using the refiner. There are example workflows for everything, link that in the end. And then there is the thing I spent way too much time, but I didn't really find a way on how to explain it properly, because it's just weird research experimental magic, that you can prompt the different layers of the image generation with different prompts, and it actually works and generates consistent images. It's called the IP adapter mad scientist, but it's really user unfriendly. But it gets really great results, and in my sources there are some videos on it. I think they will really get their cool stuff. And then this is the link section. The main resource for workflows, models, and everything is Civit AI. Also for just workflows, RunConfy. Basically, the cool thing is you just download a JSON, you drag and drop it into your Comfy UI, and then you have it. So they really made it for reproducibility. Sometimes if you locally named your models different from how they named it on their thing, you first have to select the model. But typically stuff is rather on the more reproducible side. You often have to download the model, but with the Comfy UI manager, it's just in the menu, download missing nodes, download missing models, and you can just download a workflow and change some little things around, which is why this is just so user-friendly. It's basically like stealing Python code from GitHub, changing three lines, and you have a tool that does exactly what you want. You don't actually need to know Python. Then there are some really great YouTube channels, Latent Vision, A Latent Place, ByCloud AI, and Nerdy Rodent really show you how to use the tools, talk you through it basically step by step. Most of them also have some really great Discord communities. I'm hanging around a lot in Latent Vision, which is one of the YouTubers that develops the IP adapter mad scientist stuff. He's more from the artistic side, so as you probably noticed, nothing of the things I made is really aesthetically pleasing. That's basically why I'm giving this workshop. I hope you have more of a sense of aesthetics. And after this thing, there will be a workshop. I rented a GPU, and you can actually try the thing. I'll try to get you up and running. You only need a computer with a browser. That's it. No GPU, no money, no nothing. Yeah. That's it. Sorry for going a bit over time.
Vielen herzlichen Dank.